Shalom, and thank you for listening to Progressively Jewish, the podcast where you can explore and connect to Judaism through a progressive Jewish lens. I'm Rabbi Richard Jacobin. It's my pleasure to host this week's episode for the double portion of Vayakhel Pekudei, which covers Exodus chapter 35 to the conclusion of the book at the end of chapter 40. The jumping-off point for this week's theme of Shabbat, its restrictions and its freedoms, comes at the beginning of chapter 35, in verses 2 and 3. Sheshet yamim ta'aseh melacha, uvayom hashvi'i yichye lachem kodesh, Shabbat Shabbaton ladonai, kol ha'oseh vo melacha yumat. Lo tevaaru eish b'chol moshvoteichem b'yom ha-shabbat. On 6 days may work be done, but on the seventh day you shall have a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to the Eternal One. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death. You shall kindle no fire throughout your settlements on the Sabbath day. So to explore this topic with me are two of my ordained colleagues and friends, Rabbi Debbie Young-Summers of the Edgware and Hendon Reform Synagogue, who is also a part of the Progressively Jewish team, and Reverend Graham Buckle, the Vicar of St. Stephen with St. John in Westminster. Hello, Debbie.
Hello, lovely to be here.
And hello, Graham.
Oh, hi, really good. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Pleasure to have you both here. Let me turn to you first away and ask perhaps Debbie first and then Graham for your thoughts on the two verses I've just read and their importance and perhaps whether they liberate or constrain you. Debbie.
Sure. So, I mean, I think as a starting point, the line that jumps out is the whole putting to death issue, which I obviously wouldn't advocate for and don't think is a healthy response to how we approach Shabbat. But I'm always conscious that I'm a slightly odd creature when it comes to Shabbat observance within a progressive world. And yeah, I grew up in a very typical Reform family where Shabbat was important and we went to synagogue and we had Friday night dinner, but you know, I would go out after Friday night dinner and we would watch the rugby on Saturday afternoon. And in my early 20s, really, I heard an explanation for Shabbat that just transformed my understanding of it and what it could mean in my life. Which came from one of my teachers, Barbara Spector, who is a Hartman Fellow and was director of Paideia in Stockholm. And she explained Shabbat as a unique Jewish philosophy, whereby 6 days of the week, we are meant to engage and challenge and change the world and be a partner with God in creation, as the text says, you know, to work and to be present in the world. And one day of the week is about creating a balance in our lives by moving away from all of that. It says you shall do no work, but I think to try and understand what work means, we can look at the Genesis texts around creation and God rested on the seventh day. For me, that rest isn't about work in the sense of doing my job. It's about not changing the world in significant ways, acknowledging that I'm not in charge of everything, that I can't change and fix everything. And to, in some way, really restrict my world by saying I'm limited and I take time for other things in this day and in this space. And it's interesting you use the language of restrictions and you know, I think for a lot of people, those traditional ways of thinking about Shabbat seem as restrictions and limitations. But over the years, as I've embraced things like turning off my phone, not getting in my car, and in many ways limiting my world, they have been liberations and freedoms that have created balance in my life that I don't think I'd have otherwise. But I do see that as being a very Reform and progressive response to Shabbat. And I definitely don't think it works for everyone. And we certainly shouldn't be putting anybody to death who doesn't embrace that model of things.
I'm certainly pleased to hear that we've straight away ruled out that punishment. And Graham, I'm presuming you might rule out that punishment as well, but I'd be...
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's the sticking point of this piece of this text, of course. And in fact, if it was to come to fruition, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who've already been put to death. And I suppose it's a kind of a matter of, as all these things are, of interpretation. I mean, Sabbath, I mean, going back to the text, the idea of complete rest is, you know, how do people rest? You know, I think there's a great question there is, what is rest? You know, for what one person's dream is another person's nightmare. You know, for me, rest sometimes can be active. You know, I'm a swimmer. Open water swimmer. I love swimming, but it's, and I feel it's, personally, I feel it's quite holy. I think it's a holy spiritual thing, and I get a great deal out of it. There's no screens. There are nobody to talk to. I'm actually alone swimming, and it's at that time when I actually feel God's presence, really presence. And that bit where it says in the text, holy, holy to the eternal one. Well, I think whatever that rest is, if it's done within that, within the concept of that Holy One in mind, then it is rest. And I think that's something that's really, really important that we really take to heart. Now, I mean, there's lots of other things. I'm a great advocate for Shabbat. I'm a great advocate for rest and actually having a rest family day. I think it's something that we've lost, certainly in our tradition, and I think it's a great, great shame. And it's, I think that's where we've put the, I think we've put the fires on actually by, in our settlements, because we haven't taken seriously enough the whole notion, and particularly in our society, I think more than ever, and particularly in this time of pandemic, we realize that, in fact, we struggle with rest. We struggle with time on our hands. So we try and pack it. We try and fill it. We try and fill it with work, almost to justify our existence. And that's I think that's a great shame.
Thank you, Graham. And I was pleased to hear you mention the swimming. That was very much in mind as I was thinking about this. And the other aspect that I wanted to pick up was I can remember having a similar feeling to that you described in terms not of the swimming and that getting you a mental and a physical rest. For me, it was something slightly different in that I enjoyed playing cricket. And a game of cricket on over the weekend, if it was on Shabbat, would be a great way of switching away from everything that felt like work to me.
I think there's a really interesting thing about, I should never forget my supervisor wanting to see me about various things and said, you know, you're working too hard. I'll meet you at the Grace Gate at Lord's. And I thought, well, we're going for a walk somewhere, perhaps in Regent's Park, you know. And she took me to the cricket. And I said, but I've got things to do. She said, precisely. That's why we're sitting down here. And of course, I don't know whether you know, but at Lord's, they have a scrambler for mobile phones, so you can't use your phone, which is great. So actually, all you can do is watch the cricket, and apart from other things, like have a little glass of wine, of course. But I think that is good. It seems to be the great time waster. But in fact, personally, I don't know about you, Debbie, it's the time when I get most done, when I have got time. It's just the time when I think about things. It's the time when I'm most of my creative.
I mean, I think in the modern world, that whole idea of the phone scrambler is so interesting because we are so interconnected and so reliant. And, you know, the idea of sitting through a cricket match, which is hours long, with no phone to kind of multitask with or distract you, it's almost horrific, but actually that's what I wanted from my Shabbat, was to be able to switch all that off and take it off. And, you know, particularly as clergy, to put boundaries around those things is really healthy.
I go on and we are encouraged to have a week's retreat. usually at a what's called a religious house, where there'll be either monks or nuns or whatever who are reciting that constant prayer. But it's not necessarily, you know, and I always try and go to somewhere where it's complete silence, and there's nothing, I mean, there is really nothing like it. And of course, when I get there, I think, oh my goodness, I really, really could do without this. This is the last thing I need at this present juncture. Of course, when I go to leave, I find it a real wrench. I find the kind of going back into the world really, really difficult. But even though you're out of the world, you're in it. And I tend to take absolutely nothing other than the scriptures. And the last few times I've gone, I haven't even been able to get even if I did have a phone, I wouldn't be able to get a signal anyway. And it's such a liberating thing, and so, so creative. I commend it to everybody, and I certainly to my congregants, I say, you know, it's really good, even if it's just for a day, just to spend time out of the usual thing that we do and just rest in God, and actually spend a bit of time reflecting on our scriptures, reflecting on our life, and not having to have the outside influence of being, again, justifying ourselves, busyness, and just waiting on the Lord, really, I suppose.
Thank you, Graham. And I'm not surprised to hear you mentioning these ideas. And this sense that we do have to be busy reminds me very much of the difference between what we want and what we need. And as much as we might not want that separation from our phone or our devices of any sort, and our separation indeed from some of the other pressures in society and stimuli in society, Shabbat is, I guess, telling us that this is something that we need, this separation. So maybe that allows us to develop the question of, you know, what does it mean to rest? And how is rest holy? And I think, Debbie, you wanted to pick up on that. Maybe you want.
I just wanted to pick up quickly on that idea of want and need, which I think is so fascinating. And there's an extension of the idea of Shabbat, which is called Shemitah, which is that every 7 years, the land rests. Shabbat isn't just for us, but the land gets a Shabbat every 7 years. And during that seventh year, debts are forgiven and the land can't be harvested and certain slaves are freed. And there's a real social leveling. But in saying you can't harvest the land, you have to really assess what it is that you need versus what you want. You can only pick what you need for your family for that day. And I think Shabbat is very much about the same impulse of, you know, understanding enoughness, which we are terrible at. And I own that for myself, right? I love a bargain in the sales and thinking about how we consume. I think Shabbat and Shemitah together are meant to help restore balance to this sense of what it is to have enough and to accept enoughness and not, oh, I really want that, but actually, do I really need that?
Really pleased you mentioned about that, because I think that whole idiom of the land resting is a really good thing. We do that with our church buildings, actually. We have a time when we don't have any groups in, I think it's really important for buildings and the place just to breathe. And in our modern day farming and agriculture, we've gone ballistic, haven't we? We've just kind of, in fact, that's why some of the earth, and I was reading a really interesting article in the week about how there's a real concern about soil and what we're doing to soil. There's a real problem, and we're concreting over things, but also it's on the land that we're constantly using pesticides, and there's no rest. There's no rest for the land. And I think this is quite a serious notion. I mean, they weren't stupid, were they, a few years ago when they wrote our scriptures? I mean,
and it's not just biblical. In medieval England, they had,
well, of course,
four-part fields. It's like people got it. They knew how the land coped. But so, Richard, you were asking about how all this is holy. How is rest holy? And, you know, I think that restoration for the land or for us is holy work, is important work. But also in Hebrew, the root of holiness, the word, is about separation. And that can be a really tricky thing to get your head around, because we don't always think separation is a good thing. We want to be together, we want to connect, we want to be interconnected. But the separation of time is holy. And that's what we're blessing on a Friday night when we say Kiddush. We're blessing the time, not the wine. We always think we're blessing the wine. We're actually blessing the day itself. And saying that we're in holy time really means we're in separate time, right? This time is set aside to be something different. And for me, that difference is about saying, I need to accept that I'm not in charge of everything and accept my limitations, and that there is a power greater than me in the world. Not that I think I am the be all and end all the rest of the week, but I do put more effort into trying to make the world as I want it to be. On Shabbat, I accept the world as it is. And that's holy, I think, to accept where we are.
I think you're absolutely right. And it's God-given, isn't it? You know, actually, it's a gift. And, you know, we should accept gifts. We don't. It's rude not to accept a gift, even if we find it uncomfortable, you know. And I think it's such an important gift. Well, I should never forget when I had a, we were allowed a sabbatical every 10 years in our tradition. We are allowed to go away. And lots of people say, "Oh, I'm far too busy. I don't know how you can afford the time." You know, which is a nonsense. I mean, I've taken every single one. I think it's really, really important. So in my 30 years, I've had three sabbaticals. And I should never forget my second one. I came up with this great long list of things I was going to do, and the Bishop of London, very, very wise person, because and true wisdom is that about not talking about things you don't know about, and he had that concept. But the one thing he did know about was sabbaticals, and he turned around to me and he said, "Graham, please take the notion of Shabbat into your sabbatical. I think you need to go away and learn what that means." And he was right. He was absolutely right. And I had to build in a bit of rest, and, you know, and one thing I did do was spend a bit of time with my dear old mum, who died actually the following year. And I'm so pleased. It was just such great quality time, you know, that I was actually spent just having meals with her, just sitting down and listening to her, rather than listening to me and all what I was doing. And it was, I shall never, ever forget that. And I'm indebted to the Bishop of London for getting me to kind of have that notion in my head.
Thank you both for picking up on different aspects of the questions raised by this text in such a powerful way. And I want to move into the period we've just had, because Graham, you talked about the idea of buildings lying fallow. And of course, in an enforced way, our synagogues and our churches have, through this COVID period, lain fallow. And we've had to reinvent some of the ways in which we communally gather for worship and the way we use the technology for that and so on. And I know that that's changed our concept of what it is to communally observe the Shabbat, observe the Sabbath. And I wonder if you could both perhaps pick up on that a little bit. Debbie, I know it's been a key kind of disruptive factor for you.
Yeah, it's a funny one, because I think after 17 years really of being off technology, not in my car, not cooking, all those things on Shabbat that we associate with being quite traditional Shabbat observances, but for me were quite a radical statement of how to be in the world. I didn't see them as being traditional, I saw them as a radical response to modernity. I started a new congregational job in the middle of lockdown, and there was no way to gather on Shabbat except online. Now, for many Orthodox communities, that just meant they didn't gather. But we have that option. And it felt to me like a way of preserving Pikuach Nefesh, of preserving human life, because it was helping us connect. And I think for a lot of people, not having Shabbat services really impacts their mental health. So being able to be together and gather in that way, it was just obvious that I was going to go online, even though that does involve loss. There is in this particular context, there's been huge gain in that. And I actually found myself needing that online connection, because we're also disconnected. It's been really important as a space. Having said that, one of my big fears is, having started the job in this way, how do I, once we're out of this period, reclaim my Shabbat observance and my, you know, not texting people back when they've sent me a message in the middle of the service about the sound quality on Zoom or whatever it is. You know, there has been an assumption of our use of technology over the last year. And I do wonder how I reclaim my holy space once we are back in normal time. But it just takes explaining, hopefully.
I don't know whether there really will be another normal. In some respects, we've certainly been Zooming all our services, but we've been open since the last lockdown. So the first lockdown, obviously, everybody had to be shut, but we were given the option. So we've done a hybrid, a bit like the motor car, and actually people have. Not many people have come back. It's those who haven't got access to the technology or those who are feeling very, very lonely. The rest of families and people have been online. So the vast majority have been online. But one thing that it has done is it's given us the notion of the international flavor of this. You know, we have a tradition to have morning and evening prayer, and that's gone on throughout, and we've been Zooming that. And we've been joined by our Link Church in New York at that, and also some friends in India and Burma. And one famous time, I should never forget, we had a wonderful prayer time where we had friends from New York, we had some friends, old parishioners in South Africa, friends. I mean, it was just truly international. Of course, it was evening prayer for us. That's why everybody could join us. It was really, really special.
And in a way, these technologies have opened up amazing opportunities in that way. So, I mean, at Hanukkah, we did something similar and went to a different place around the world every night of Hanukkah because everybody was online. And it was so fun to do. And we wouldn't have thought of that a year ago, I don't think.
It's certainly going to open up, isn't it? And
the other part of that is the opening up of these spaces for people who have genuinely been housebound for decades or for years and have kind of not had access to these spaces. We're now realizing it can be done and it needs to continue to be done to keep people accessing and feeling included.
We had one member of our church community, and she's had a stroke. She was the one person that it defiantly came when she probably shouldn't have come, actually. I mean, she didn't have a stroke because she was just old, and that was, you know, it was dementia. Anyway, you don't need to know about that, but we were very, very concerned for her. She's in St. Thomas's Hospital. We were unable to visit, but I got in contact with the ward sister. I mean, as if they haven't got anything better to do, but bless their hearts. They got her on Zoom for us, and she was able to be with us for our worship. Well, what was great about that? It wasn't just great for her, but it was great for us. It gave us a real huge boost to see Joanna. And I think sometimes we forget the community that, you know, I don't know about you, Debbie, there's times when I've seen, you know, somebody has come up, and I don't know about you, Richard, you know, somebody's come up on Zoom and it's broken my heart to see them, because I just thought, oh my goodness, you know, and you realise the strength of our communities there, not just in our rest, which is important, but in our being together in whatever that shape that worship takes.
You've both touched on something really important, and it does, you know, resonate so strongly with me. And one family, our congregants, had said, you know, we'd given up the possibility of being able to get to synagogue, and now we've found that synagogue is coming to us and is coming into our house, and we don't have to move. And given their health conditions, that has been so, so important for them. And you're right, we can't envision a future where we exclude those people again. And so we've got this tension, haven't we, between how we keep Shabbat and how we do what we need to do in a 21st century where we've had this enforced realization of different experiences. So, Graham, you already touched on the word hybrid. And I think this question of how we begin to look forward to the hybrid future and hopefully find a way of, Debbie, you being able to celebrate a Shabbat that is meaningful, and also for all of us as clergy people, that we can have a Sabbath day that allows us to have what we need and not necessarily what we want, bearing in mind the wisdom that our traditions have given us, and we shouldn't throw that out, you know, baby with bathwater, so to speak. I think
it's also creating Shabbat, sorry, Richard, it's creating Shabbat at other times, isn't it, as well? Because, you know, I belong to a reading group, and it came out of a sabbatical, and they said, well, why wouldn't it be great to have this all the time, you know, to actually have some rest and some worship, and that happens three times. But, you know, I occasionally, like Debbie has, you know, I've, much to the disgust of some of my staff members, I have non-screen days. And I was inspired by a school down the road who just said, you know, we are, for the children's mental health, we're going to have a non-screen day. And in fact, what's interesting, they had to prepare for it. Because it's so difficult to do, because we are so screen-centered on our phones, on our TVs, on our computers, it's actually jolly hard to do. And certainly during Lent, that's what I've been doing. Once a week, I have a non-screen day. But my goodness, it's difficult. But my goodness, do I benefit from it? Not just spiritually, but also in my well-being.
That's really interesting. And again, this question of, are we willing to take what seems to be superficially a restriction that actually we could find liberating in order to gain the benefit from it that makes us sustainable? And that seems to be one of the themes. And Debbie, you used that terminology earlier. And I just wonder if you want to pick up on how, looking forward, you think this is going to, you want this to go, or more to the point, you need this to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because I think we have to acknowledge that actually in the last year, we have needed what we have done, right? Even though that has been with the technology and, you know, yes, switching off is good, but actually, as you know, Martin Buber says that when two people meet, God is in the electricity between them. And I think for me that this year, that has been such a source of sustenance, this idea that God is in the electricity between us, even though traditionally that doesn't work in our models of Shabbat, we've needed the connection and we've needed to find God among us, even when we are separated physically. And we've needed to find us among us. I think a lot of our sense of self and mental health has been challenged this year. And for me, Shabbat has always been a way of looking after myself and looking after those around me. And I think going forward, we keeping that at the core of what it means to honor Shabbat. It's funny, it always strikes me that as the Jewish and Christian communities approach Shabbat, It was in my childhood or my teens, really, when the Sunday trading laws started to shift. And I have so many interesting conversations with people about whether they miss that sense of being able to really watch the world stop, because so much of what we do is about shopping and consuming. And for me, not consuming on Shabbat is still completely possible. And what I do, you know, I still don't go shopping on Shabbat. I will only do what I really have to do for services. And I do think there's something bigger in this of not just looking after ourselves, but looking after the world that we live in. And the consumption part of that is really, really important going forward. We have to look at how we consume. And I think having Sabbath spaces is a really great part of that. You know, there was a big campaign for meat-free Mondays. We save meat for Shabbat. So we reduce our meat intake by 6/7, if you like, rather than it making it something we do irregularly. You know, Shabbat can be a time where we, or the Sabbath on a Sunday can be a time when we really envisage a world where it's not about what we want, it's about what we need. And consumption is such a huge part of that, and is such a huge part of how we are destroying the world around us.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think it goes with that whole the essence of Shabbat, you know, of the land as well, with the 7-year cycle. I mean, and being, I mean, the only problem is with that, I think, Debbie, I'm just thinking about our human nature. I shall never forget my mum used to give the most ridiculous amounts of butter on her bread, you know. I mean, I said, Mum, you know, for crying out loud, you know, it's too much, you know. And she was a great consumptionist because she was a person of the war when it was actually all reduced. You haven't done me any harm, you know, she used to say, haven't done me, you just be fine. You know? I said, but you had rations. Which she obviously forgot. And what concerns me is out of this COVID thing where we've been restricting people and their consumption, which I'm sure people have actually thought about it. We've seen when lockdowns actually open up, people go berserk, as the Viking idea goes. You know, actually we start to consume, you know, we've been frugal. Let's consume, you know, and we all go ballistic, and that's my concern. And that, you know, we hear the cries of so many people from very many religions saying, you know, let's learn from this. Well, it's difficult. And you know, we're in the season of Lent, and I was saying to somebody, you know, what are you giving up? And they said, well, I'm not giving up anything. I'm about to give up for the last year. You know, actually, it's been a difficult time for me. I'm not going to make this time of Lent difficult. I just hope, my hope, Debbie, is exactly the same, is that we learn not to be consumerists, or certainly look at what we do really need. And I hope that we can, rediscover the whole notion of Shabbat and rest within the Lord, per se, throughout our lives, just to everybody.
As much as I could see this conversation going on and on, because there's just so many topics that we're touching on and we could open up, and the nature of Shabbat and the connections that you've created for me, certainly, about the need for rest and recuperation, the damage we're doing to the land, the damage we're doing to ourselves, the excesses of overconsumption, and what damage that is doing to globally, nationally, locally, our societies. We could be discussing all of these things for a very long time. And I am just so grateful. You two have left me with so many questions to ask and things to think about, and I'm sure our listeners are going to be grateful for those questions too. If, and I'm speaking to those who are listening now, if you feel that anything in this episode has triggered some interest in you, please do give us some feedback. Do let us know what your thoughts are. You can leave a comment with your podcast provider, or you can send an email to progressivelyjewish@gmail.com. That's one word, progressivelyjewish@gmail.com. So my thanks on everyone's behalf go to our guests this week, Rabbi Debbie Young-Summers and Reverend Graham Buckle. Our thanks also go to Liberal Judaism, Reform Judaism and Lehrbeck College for supporting Progressively Jewish, and to you, our listeners, for making this effort worthwhile. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to Progressively Jewish and encourage your friends to do so. In next week's episode, Rabbi Debbie will be taking this chair from me and inviting her guests to discuss how the role of mikveh has changed as a symbol of purity and purification, or revitalizing, or looking after our wellness. So topical for the beginning of the book of Vayikra, the beginning of the book of Leviticus. So thank you again, Debbie. Thank you, Graham. And farewell to all the listeners. Bye for now.